tired of the same boring and unhealthy diet of corporate media propaganda and the distraction du jour? Your antidote is here at Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Real, revolutionary, and relevant news and talk with fascinating and brilliant guests. Prepare to be informed and motivated with your friend and host, Cindy Sheehan.
Back to the Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. Today's guest is Dr. Will Tuttle. He's a visionary, author, educator, and inspirational speaker. He's author of the acclaimed Amazon number one bestseller, The World Peace Diet, published in 16 languages. He has presented widely through the world in all 50 states and over 50 countries over the past 40 years, sharing the vegan message in many thousands of lectures, arguably more than anyone in history. A recipient of the Courage of Conscience Award and the Empty Cages Prize, he is also author of Your Inner Islands, The Keys to Intuitive Living, as well as editor of Circles of Compassion, Essays Connecting Issues of Justice, and the newly released Buddhism and Veganism, Essays Connecting Spiritual and Animal Liberation. So stay tuned and we'll be right back with Dr. Will Tuttle. Dr. Will Tuttle, welcome to the Soapbox.
Thank you so much, Cindy. I'm delighted to be with you here.
Well, thank you. I've known about your work for a long time. I've followed it. I don't know if you remember, but either you sent me your World Peace Diet or somebody gave it to me, but you inscribed it to me. So I know
I signed it to you. Yes.
You did. I was very happy to get it.
I'm so glad. You've been one of my heroes for a long time, too. I really appreciate your standing up to Bush's and the whole administration for their crazy wars in Iraq and everything else over the years.
Right. And I've been trying to do it with, you know, the other presidents that we've had since Bush and the other wars. And
right.
It just seems like the grassroots is so partisan. It's like when a Democrat's in, then the wars aren't so bad. And, you know, and then like Republicans like war. So I'm generalizing. Of course, there's many Republicans who oppose the wars and stuff like that. So it's just really hard to get, you know, any kind of momentum going when every 4 to 8 years we're switching the different, commanders in chief.
Right. And especially lately, it seems like the Democrats have become the war party much more. Most recent thing, was only Republicans voted against giving all this money for the Ukraine war, and Democrats are totally on board. So it's really switched around now.
Kind of off our topic, but you know, they spent. It is a World Peace Diet. So we are
right,
peace. But
peace. All
you know, they
peace.
Spent since 2016, since Clinton lost the election, demonizing Putin. So now, if you don't want nuclear war, you must be, a Trump or Putinist or something. It's so weird.
It is. Everything is upside down.
So tell my listeners a little bit about yourself before we get into your main focus of peace.
Oh, sure. Well, I'm most well known for being the author of the book that you just mentioned, The World Peace Diet, Eating for Spiritual Health and Social Harmony. And that book was a number one Amazon bestseller in 2010. It's been translated now into about 17 languages, and we've traveled, my wife and I, all over the world, giving lectures in all 50 states and all over 50 countries, promoting the message of the World Peace Diet, which is essentially that as long as we are going to insist on exploiting and oppressing and abusing billions of animals routinely and relentlessly, then we are sowing the seeds not only for misery for them, but for ourselves as well. It's a war against nature and a war against animals that we've been born into. So the World Peace Diet really doesn't blame anyone. It's more understanding the culture that we're born into that mm-hmm. has a 10,000-year history of animal agriculture, which is domination not only against nature and the animals, but against the sacred feminine dimension of life. And so we're all wounded by that. That's the basic idea. And mm-hmm. when we understand that, we can begin to realize why we have these chronic problems of war and violence and exploitation and injustice. And but I live here in California, and in Northern California. I got my PhD at Berkeley back in the 80s, and I remember very well how we fought against nuclear weapons and everything else. But I've been always trying to get people to see the deeper causes of the problems that we're having. And so that's really, I think, important, especially now with the loss of our constitutional freedoms, censorship, medical tyranny rearing its ugly head everywhere, war, all these things. It's almost like everything we do to animals boomerangs back on us. You know, we insist on our right to force medicate them, to track them, to imprison them, abuse them, and we find eventually that the same thing's happening to us. So we really, it's an ancient teaching. As you sow, so shall you reap. We have to really learn to understand these universal principles and live by them. And so that's the message that I'd like to share. And that's what we've been doing for the last 20 years or so.
There's so much to grab on from that.
Right.
Our mutual friend, Bob Linden, who does Go Vegan Radio, what I like about him because he's consistent. You know, a lot of people who are liberal, like, have kind of bought into the medical tyranny. He's just really has been really concerned about his fellow vegan activists for animals who have, and me as well, my fellow anti-imperialists, anti-war, you know, pro-peace, who have, you know, become spokespeople for big pharma, right?
Right, and right.
So it's just amazing. But Bob always says, one of his favorite quotes is, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields. And that's, speaking of Russia, a quote from the Russian writer Leo Tolstoy. So
yes,
one of the things that when I went vegan, you know, many, many years ago, I forget what, maybe it was the Robbins book,
uh-huh.
World Diet for
New America.
New America. Maybe it was that, but maybe
uh-huh.
I read so much. But one of the things that I read that I think you touched on already was that the animals, the torture that they go through, and not just like the physical torture, but the mental torture, you know, mother cows getting their calves taken away from them. And, you know, the fright, the terror, they know that something terrible is about to happen to them. That gets into the meat. And then the adrenaline that they go through gets transferred to people. And when the people who eat that, and when I see how aggressive, not just the leadership of the United States is, but the people, and the United States eats probably, I don't know, but per capita, probably one of the most amounts of meat per person in the world. So what are your thoughts about that?
Right. Well, I think it's a really good point. And I have a whole chapter actually in the World Peace Diet called The Metaphysics of Food, which goes into what you're talking about. And you're right. The United States has the highest per capita consumption of animal flesh in the world.
Maybe it was your book, but I'm thinking that I read it a lot earlier than I read, you know, even before my son was killed. I think I had read that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So So the United States, we have the the distinguishing characteristics that we can be proud of: eating the most meat, having the most people in prison, having the war machine, and so forth. And it all, I think, goes together. We have, of course, one of the sickest populations as well. Eating animal foods is devastating, not just to the animals or to our physical health, but really to our spiritual and psychological, and I would say ethical health, because underlying everything is this violence and misery and suffering that we're inflicting on the animals. And it's not just causing us to eat physical toxins, and there's a lot of different types of physical toxins that concentrate in animal foods. And dairy products and eggs, I just want to say at the beginning here, are probably more toxic and more violent even than animal flesh, because the animals are abused so severely and for longer periods of time. Mm-hmm. So eggs and dairy are definitely really brutal. And so it's well understood that all the pesticide, herbicide, and fungicide residues end up in the flesh and secretions of animals. But also, besides all that, there are the naturally occurring toxins in these foods, like the IGF-1 growth hormone and other toxins, just the saturated fat and cholesterol and other hormones that are in animal-based foods. And like you mentioned, adrenaline. And so these are all documented to be harmful to us. But beyond all that, even, there are what I refer to as metaphysical toxins, which is the basic fact that we're eating terror and fear and pain and despair and misery and anxiety. These animals are basically subjected to both chronic and acute pain and fear their entire short lives. They're relatively short, but they're killed really as children or as young, what would be teenagers, I guess. A dairy cow is usually killed at the age of about 5, even though they would live for about 25 years. And they've already given birth at that point to 5 calves. So it's a rape and kill operation, and it really breaks down the health of these animals very quickly. And all of the babies are killed, and usually that would be half females and half males. And so that despair that these animals feel, and we lived in an RV, Madeline and I, for 17 years, just traveling around the United States full time, giving hundreds of lectures every year. And sometimes we would park our RV in a campground that was near a dairy operation. And I've heard it, quite a few times over the years. At 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, the dairy cows, you can hear them bellowing because their babies have been stolen. And they're in agony, you're a mother. I mean, their babies are stolen over and over again.
Oh, my God.
And they're killed, and their milk is stolen. Everything is about stealing. You steal their babies, you steal their lives, you steal their purposes, you steal their milk, you steal everything. And when we do that, when we steal the purposes of other beings, what's going to happen is we're going to end up losing our purpose. And that's what's happened in this country. And I think really in the world, is that we have lost our way. We've lost our purposes over these centuries of animal agriculture, of stealing the purposes of billions of animals and eating that and teaching that to our children. We've lost our purpose, and we are now living in a society where we believe the delusion that our purpose is to consume. That really happiness and fulfillment and status, everything comes back to consuming, because consuming has been so perverted by animal agriculture. We're consuming the flesh and secretions of horror and misery and violence that we've become completely fixated on consuming, and we've lost our purpose, and we don't see the spiritual dimension of our lives as having any relevance, unfortunately. We're taught that. Mm-hmm. We have all the institutions in our society basically reflect that, our educational institutions, our economic and governmental institutions, and even religion has become profoundly materialistic in most cases.
For sure.
That's the situation. So this is one of the things we just have to understand. And again, I think the healthiest way to look at it is really to see that it's a wound. We've been wounded, and now it's up to us to heal these wounds in ourselves and try to heal them in others. And then also as a process of awakening, that we've in many ways been hypnotized and put into a trance, under a spell, in a sense, by a toxic, violent system that that basically gets us through the food. That's the main way. When you get kids from infancy to eat terror and fear and pain and despair and to shut down and suppress what I refer to in the World Peace Diet as Sophia, which is the sacred feminine dimension of life that yearns to love and nurture and protect the young, when that's repressed by eating the flesh and secretions of tortured animals, then you have a whole society basically where Sophia is suppressed. And then instead of rising up and defending the children and rising up and defending our communities and nature and our environment, which Sophia would naturally do, doesn't happen. And corporations and gigantic banks and financial institutions and military industrial complex can go about their business and people right. don't protest. You know, so it's really that dumbing down and desensitization process that animal agriculture inflicts on all of us. That's the great wound. So the whole idea is to resurrect the sacred feminine dimension of consciousness, our true nature, the Sophia feminine dimension that naturally protects life. And that's what I think, that's why I love your work. I mean, you're such a beautiful example of the sacred feminine rising up to protect life and to protect nature and children and to make a protest against the insanity of the system that is a war against not only animals, but against ourselves and our own children. And that's what I think we really need to see clearly, that our food rituals, and they really are rituals, when we eat meals, that's the most basic way. And I took quite a few courses in anthropology and social psychology and so forth. And essentially, just to understand that basic point that every society transmits its values from generation to generation, that's what societies do. And they do it through the rituals. And the main ritual, actually, in every society are meals. When people sit down and eat food, we're not just eating food. We're not just sitting there eating food. We're eating a whole story, a narrative. And we have to learn to look deeply and see what that is. But we're not taught to do that. We're taught to stay shallow and just pretend that we're just eating a fish stick. We're just eating a piece of cheese. We're just eating an egg and a McMuffin. You know, we don't look to see the being in the thing. We're trained from infancy to stay shallow and to stay disconnected and to not look deeply or feel deeply or care deeply. And when that happens again to a whole society, everyone is wounded. And that woundedness projects out into violence against other beings. And we don't feel it because we've been trained not to feel. Mm-hmm. So that's why veganism isn't veganism. Veganism is basically just the ancient wisdom teaching of ahimsa, which means nonviolence, to simply live our lives to minimize violence to others. That's actually, we know that in our bones, is the way to happiness and harmony for not only for ourselves, but for everyone. But animal agriculture reduces these beings to mere matter. We buy and sell them by the pound. That is so barbaric, it's incomprehensible that we do that millions of times every day, and then we act like we're good, loving, kind, just, caring people, when it's obvious that we're not, and we know we're not. So there's this huge hypocrisy going on under the surface, and we love and protect and care for companion animals, perhaps, but then we have this whole class of animals, billions of them,
right,
we're just eating and we don't care about them. And so that is kind of a psychotic split that takes place in our entire society. And it explains so much. So again, it doesn't help to blame. I think the most important thing is we've got to heal ourselves and create a whole new foundation for our society, really, based on compassion for animals and for human animals, and question every narrative, question every single narrative, especially the pharmaceutical medical narrative.
Absolutely.
Because I've discovered it's the pharmaceutical industry that is actually the most violent, evil, destructive industry there is when it comes to animal abuse. And more than the meat, dairy, and egg industry, even, and it's getting its talons into us more than ever. So we really have to get this message out, I think, to people, and to understand how our treatment to our mistreatment of animals boomerangs back on us in many deep ways, obvious ways on the outer level, but much deeper ways when it gets into our relationships with each other, our emotions, our spirituality. it really devastates everything. That's the thing. There's nothing good. I mean, animal agriculture destroys everything it touches. It's demonic and satanic at its core. But we're taught that it's good. It's how the West was won. It's what makes our country great. It's where we get our protein. It's how we get our calcium. You know, we're taught all these things. We have to realize the depth of the lie that is. That's the fundamental hoax, or it's like a Trojan horse. You know, it's given to us as a gift to help us, and it's actually does nothing but destroy everything we care about.
You're so eloquent. I can just sit here and listen to you. And so your answer just brought up a couple of things to me as well. So I've shared this with Bob when I've done his show. When I post anything on my social media about veganism, it's when I get the most pushback and hostility from people. Wow. And like you said, most people, unless they're just like complete psychopaths, love animals. And, you know, you can drive by a pasture with cows and people go, oh, look at those cute cows. But they try to intellectually, but emotionally, they can't separate those cute cows in the field with what's on their plate, even though they try to. But a lot of people say, but that's why God created animals. You said that people try to prevent them from their purpose, but most people will justify it by saying God created them. That is their purpose, to feed us.
Well, exactly. And the tragedy of that, quite honestly, is that only a slave would ever say that. You know, only a slave would ever have that thought. And that's the depth to which we've fallen. A free person, it would be so obvious that that's so absurd. I mean, no being is created to be the slave of another being, right? I mean, only a slave could say that.
Right.
And so that's the problem. We want to have freedom. We've already lost so much freedom already. It's really tragic. But if we can't see that these beings evolved for millions of years to fulfill their purposes and that they have feelings and that their sovereignty is important to them. It's very important to them. Anyone who thinks about it for a minute will know that freedom is precious. If we're confined in a cage, behind a wire, and we can't move our body, we've lost our sovereignty. I mean, that's the thing. These animals, the great crime against these animals is we have stolen their sovereignty, and they're born into a situation where they are completely dependent. And that's a total insult against the creator or anything or nature itself. We have a garden here where we live, and we had to put a deer fence up to keep the deer out from eating all the trees and everything.
Right.
And I remember it was a nylon fence in the beginning, and now we have a metal one, but the nylon fence worked perfectly. They never got in. But then a deer got in through a gate or something, and she realized that she was trapped in this garden, and she just destroyed the fence. I mean, she smashed it. She tore it down.
Right.
And it was such a vivid example to me. You know, animals who are caught in traps will bite their own foot off to get out of the trap. I mean, that's how much they want to be free. And so we have a yearning in our core of our being and our soul to be free. And all beings do. And so if you put an animal into a cage and say that, well, that's their purpose, is to be a slave and for me to steal their life and then kill them and eat their flesh, any human being who can even formulate that thought has already lost, unfortunately, not only their freedom, but their intelligence, their basic intelligence, and their intuition, their spiritual wisdom has been sacrificed. That's a wounded person. It's very wounded, unfortunately. Nothing you can do but try to heal that and be an example. I think, you know, we have to be examples of another way of living, to realize that freedom is precious, and that's what's happening right now in our society. I mean, we're seeing people willing, not only willing, but actually enthusiastically giving up things that people fought and died for, and freedoms of expression, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of religion, freedom of bodily autonomy. These are just being given up by slaves. And because, you know, this is the thing, and animal agriculture does, unfortunately, if we eat that stuff, it does turn us into a slave, and it shuts down our intelligence. You know, my PhD at Berkeley was in education, and I focused quite a bit on intelligence, what it is, and there's different types of intelligence. But the basic thing is that intelligence is the capacity to make relevant connections, to connect the dots, to see how things connect. That's what intelligence is in any human being, or really even in any being. And animal agriculture, it's basically what it does is it attacks intelligence. Every time we're eating animal-based foods, we want to not make the connection. I don't want to think about where it came from. Right. I'm not eating a cow's secretion. I'm eating cheese, right? We just learn to not make the connection. It's a ritualized, and it's done in a social setting, reduction of not only cognitive intelligence, but emotional intelligence and spiritual intelligence. So everyone is basically marinated in a stew of rituals their entire lives from infancy with their loved ones and everyone around them, just every day, three times a day, reducing their intelligence, reducing over and over again, reducing their intelligence. And it explains a lot how we are able to use our technology basically for violent means, to just cut down rainforests faster than ever, survey people better than ever. And it's really time for us to regain our intelligence. And we, in order to do that, we have to learn to look deeply. We have to change our behavior. We have to stop eating animal foods and start questioning all the narratives, especially the ones coming from the mainstream media, and especially the ones that are already been in our own consciousness, because very often that's where they've lodged. And the people you're talking about that get upset with you making the connection to animal abuse, they're upset because they don't want anyone to remind them of this. Right? Right. And people feel a little bit, you know, a natural, healthy sense of remorse, really. It's a healthy sense of remorse. But we don't like that. That causes sort of a cognitive dissonance and emotional dissonance. Right. So they'd rather you just shut up and not say anything about it.
Yeah. But almost it's so about great everything that you do, I talk about, people would rather not talk about
it. I know, exactly.
I'm finding that out. So I was in Korea, South Korea, one time, and I was there with a peace delegation. The people of Korea, whether they're in South Korea or North Korea, they want peace, and the presence of the United States military is preventing that. They haven't seen, you know, we talk about 2 years here in the United States, where some people didn't get to see their grandchildren or other family members, you know, but they haven't seen their family members since the early 1950s, and most of them are dead by now, right? And so they want reunification. So I was there with a peace delegation to demand the U.S. leave the peninsula, because that war was never declared, but it has never been over either. So this one reporter from Time Magazine, she came up to me and she said, "Cindy, how can you help these people? They eat dogs." And I was like, "That's truly terrible, but do you eat chicken? Do you eat beef? Right. Do you eat pork? That's different. Those aren't pets," she said. I said, "Well, guess what? I'm not defending their eating dogs. Look at them. I love dogs. I love all animals. That's why I choose not to eat them. But they're not pets to them either. They're their food. So you're saying that I can't help people who are eating animals when you eat animals." You know?
Right.
So she kind of was like, "I think I planted a seed there." You know, but I was just, I just can't stand the hypocrisy. You love your dog, but you'll eat a pig who's probably smarter than your dog.
Right. Well, and of course, that's something I saw when I was in Korea. I was a Zen Buddhist monk there back in the early 1980s.
Oh, you were?
And Yeah, I lived in a Zen monastery in South Korea. And it was very interesting. It was right after, who was it? Whoever was elected, Reagan, or I can't remember. But I happened to be there where the very first thing that the newly elected president, his Secretary of Defense was this guy, Weiss, I can't remember his name. Anyway, the very first thing he did was go to South Korea. I remember why I watched the TV there right before I went into the monastery in South Korea in Seoul. The very first thing he did after he was became appointed Secretary of State was go to South Korea and celebrate as they demonstrated all their bombing techniques and all this stuff. And that war, you're right. I mean, that's a terrible situation, how the country's been divided. But I think, you know, in the long run, that wall will go down sooner or later, eventually, you know, when the United States, the military empire is going to collapse eventually. But I think the idea, like that you said about dogs, eating dogs and eating cows, I saw that myself. And you know, I've said that to people here. You know, they'd say, well, I could never eat a dog. That would be terrible. And I said, well, would you eat a cow? Oh, sure. I eat a cow. That's no problem. And I tell them about how in Korea, they would never eat a cow. That to them, that was a horrible thing. I mean, when I was there in the 80s, there was very little eating of cows. You know, they thought that was the most despicable thing. So,
well, it was unfortunate I was there because I didn't like how they prepared their vegetables either. But that's just me. So, you were talking about how people don't defend their children the poor animals get their children taken away from them and it causes them a lot of pain. But I'm seeing this so much in the past couple years where people are actually giving their children to Big Pharma to become guinea pigs for this vaccine.
Yeah, you know, it's terrible. Well, there's a lot of, they're being pressured into it too, of course. And I saw this a video a while back of a woman in a hospital where the hospital administrator was telling her that she was going to have her baby vaccinated. And the woman was saying, no, I don't want to do that. And then the administrator said, as long as the baby is inside of you, it's your baby. Once the baby comes out, it's our baby. You know, and it reminded me exactly of the mentality on a dairy farm or in any animal agriculture operation. It's exactly how it is. I own you. I own your baby. I'm going to steal your baby. I'm going to force medicate your baby. I'm going to do whatever I want to your baby because it's my baby. I own you and I own your baby. And we have to realize this is the main point, which is that if we're going to insist on turning free living, beautiful animals into livestock, then we are going to be also turned into livestock. We are being turned into livestock. And parents who give their kids over to Big Pharma, allow themselves to be pressured into it, they're doing that. They've already been turned into livestock, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. I see it all around me. They don't realize what they're doing. They're hypnotized, unfortunately, into believing something out of fear and out of going through a whole life of having their basic intelligence suppressed so much and Sophia suppressed so much, the sacred feminine, that they're incapable of defending their children. And because they weren't defended either by their parents. I mean, it's gone through the generations and their kids, I hate to think what's going to happen to them. If we continue on this trajectory, there's not going to be, I mean, we can see the World Economic Forum, you know, their agenda is an agenda of transhumanism and artificial intelligence without a need for human beings really much at all. So we are in the fight of our life right now. We have to understand that there's a war against humanity and the pharmaceutical industry is part of it. The whole computer tracking is a huge part of it because slavery of the entire human population is now for the first time actually technologically possible, you know, with the kind of technology and the cell phones that everybody has and 5G and everything else. So it's very important to understand that it's more important than ever that we liberate animals. If we want to be free, we really have to live this. We have to walk the talk. If we want to be free, then we have to free those who are at our mercy. What right do we have to be free if we're going to insist on enslaving other animals unnecessarily? It's completely unnecessary. I've been a vegan for 42 years now, and there's millions of people like me. And when we don't need, there's no human being that needs to eat the flesh and secretions of abused animals to get any of the nutrients that we need to thrive and to celebrate our lives on this beautiful earth. That's the great gift we've been given. We've been given this wonderful gift of a physical body that doesn't require any animals to suffer to get all the nutrients. And so the problem is we've been born into a culture where we've been forced to participate in these mealtime rituals where we learn to eat animal-based foods and we learn to like them and we want to fit in with everybody in our tribe. And so everybody's afraid to step out and eat, appropriately and to treat animals with kindness and respect. And so we continue down a path of slavery of animals, and our children pay the price. I mean, if you actually had any idea how toxic and terrible these injections are, I mean, these are really harmful. Mm-hmm. I love this quote. This is a quote from Mahatma Gandhi. He said, "Vaccination is a barbarous practice, and it is one of the most fatal of all the delusions current in our time, not to be found even among the so-called savage races of the world. Its supporters are not content with its adoption by those who have no objection to it, but seek to impose it with the aid of penal laws and rigorous punishments on all people alike." So he goes on and on about this, mm-hmm. but he's saying, and this is almost 100 years ago, Gandhi is saying right. how terrible vaccines are, and how devastating they are. And I think we have to understand that they are a way to harm and abuse and shut down people's natural health. And you don't make any money from healthy people. You can't control right. healthy people. right. I have not been to a doctor since 1972.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, 50 years. I haven't been to a pharmacy or drugstore to get any, all the things they have, the Band-Aids. I mean, we get Band-Aids, but Rolaids, Right Guard, aspirin, Tylenol, whatever. No. I've never needed any of it. I don't use it. Uh-huh. We don't need any of that stuff. I've never worn a mask ever. I've never worn a mask. I've never, obviously, never done along with any of this. I'm completely 100% opposed to any kind of medical tyranny. And we have to adopt that attitude. We have to refuse to comply, because if we don't, we're going to end up in a cage, just like these animals. Absolutely, 100%. So these so-called injections, clot shots, really is what they are. They're mm-hmm. devastating, harmful. And we have to understand that and realize that our mainstream media has been completely captured. And I understand this very well, because my father owned a whole chain of newspapers. I was born into the media.
Oh, nice.
And so I know. I mean, I grew up learning and hearing the stories mm-hmm. around the dinner table that, we can't run that article because so-and-so advertiser would object and pull their ads and we'd go out of business. So I understand in my bones that any radio, NPR, newspaper, television, it doesn't matter what it is, it's completely beholden to the advertisers. And the biggest advertisers, of course, are the pharmaceutical industry, the fast food industry, the big oil companies, the banks. They have an agenda for us, and all the news follows that. And don't believe any of it. Don't believe any of it, because there's an agenda that is to continually make more money and keep us under more and more control. We have to create alternative media. That's what you're doing. You're creating alternative media. So I really appreciate it. And that's, we have to learn from each other and not from these centralized power centers that want to control our food, our information, our energy. They want to control everything. We have to decentralize and liberate animals and ourselves, and don't expect anyone else to do it. We have to do it ourselves.
You know, people, thank you so much. People that know me know that I don't do Western medicine either, but it's only been 5 years since I've seen a doctor, a Western doctor.
Right.
But, you know, I just like had to sign up for Medicare because I'm turning 65 this year. And I just signed up for the free Medicare. And people, you would have thought people, I just told everybody I was getting ready to commit suicide because, oh my God, you need plan B because what if? And they were like, so, I'm like, I'm fine, you know?
Right.
Don't take one drug. So why do I need the, why would I need the farm, the, you know, whatever.
And
anyway, all of this should be free for everybody. You know, care should be free and available, and we should be able to access naturopathy or chiropractors or whatever, you know, we do acupuncture, whatever. That should be, that should be our fundamental human right. But people are so, you're like, we're divorced from our Sophia. We're divorced from our spirituality. We're like you said, we have these rituals that have been more, you know, burned into our psyche. But people are also like, we talk about they're taking away our body autonomy, but most people don't even want that or have it, you know?
Right.
What I've been saying for the past 2 years is that I have a wonderful mechanism called my natural immunity, and and what if I do want to catch it? What if I just want to get it so I can recover from it and my immunity is better, or you know, whatever I do to help my natural immunity? And they were saying, don't go outside, cover your breathing hole. The beaches, we're closing the playgrounds, we're closing schools, we're closing anything that can make you healthy. And by the way, don't hug anybody. Don't see your grandkids because they could kill you. You know, just like all that kind of stuff was just like, why don't you trust your own wonderful body? But a lot of people, like you said, have to do some work to get it to a space where they can trust it, but they have to let go.
First, they have to let go. Well, exactly. We have to wake up out of this delusion and out of the war. You know, you talk about war. Our whole medical system is based on a war motif.
Right.
It's based on this idea, and it's based on animal agriculture. Everything goes back to animal agriculture, which is a war against nature, a war against animals, a war against the feminine. So after 10,000 years of this war against animals, we have gotten to the point now where we're so afraid of insects and so afraid of microorganisms and so afraid of animals and nature.
I have
and
a
so
spider
completely
in the
divorced.
Corner of my room right now that's just living in the corner of my room.
Yeah, you have wildlife right in your room.
That's
great. You know, but most people are not like you. You know, they don't have that. They're afraid. We have you know, pest controllers going everywhere to kill off anything. So this massive fear. I have no fear of germs at all.
In fact,
you got to understand that our body has about 20 times more bacteria than there are cells of our own body. Mm-hmm. You know, there's trillions of bacteria, and if they died, we would die. And in terms of viruses, it's even much more. So the whole idea that we should be afraid of germs, afraid of bacteria, afraid of viruses, it's a psyop. We have to understand that. It's complete nonsense. And this idea that healthy people can spread disease, I mean, that's completely absurd. The idea that our natural immunity is somehow not as good as a injection immunity, I mean, that's a complete – everything is a lie. It's all hogwash. And I don't see how – anyone with a modicum of a few brain cells working doesn't understand that, doesn't see that. It's so clear, it's so obvious. And how I never for a minute thought that people in the United States would wear a mask. I mean, that when they said about masking, I thought, well, nobody's going to do that. I mean, and then I realized that people are paying attention to the media and to their doctors and doing things that are satanic at the core. I mean, this is a ritual. If you want to control people, you want to shut down their capacity to resist, then you don't want them to talk to each other. You want to break the solidarity of the people. So mm-hmm. everybody's afraid of each other.
Right.
And then you have the word. I mean, I used to teach college courses in comparative religion. The basic word in religion for spirit is breath. Spirit means breath in Latin. So when you just block people's breath, you're blocking their spirit. You're blocking their smile. You're blocking their capacity to talk to each other, to hear each other, to connect with each other. And you're basically making them ashamed of themselves and making everyone ashamed and disconnected. And you can't even tell who anybody is anymore. It's like everybody's a bank robber or something. I mean, they're walking around like this. It's, to me, it's the most insidious thing I've ever seen in my life, to see a bunch of people walking around in masks, afraid of a non-existent threat. And when they're healthy people can make other people sick. I mean, what kind of absurdity? That's never happened before. And then to close down businesses over that, it's been a massive wealth transfer. That's all it's been. It's been a war against the middle class, mm-hmm. a war against the lower classes, a war of division, again, dividing people with each other.
It's been trying to divide workers, essential workers,
exactly.
non-essential exactly. workers.
Right.
You know, exactly. every worker is essential.
Right.
You know, so it just...
And who's defending them? Nobody's
right, and so the people who wanted us to stay home the most were the ones who could work from home, who did have the resources to do so, but they didn't care if they had people delivering their food and their mail and, you know, right. all those so-called essential workers, because they didn't have to worry about it. And so, yeah, the working class got divided along too. Well, this is just, I could talk to you forever, but we've already been talking for 45 minutes.
I know. But I understand. We can't go on forever.
It's been a wonderful conversation. I didn't even get to ask you all the questions, but the one thing I was the most interested about is, what do you think about Bill Gates and his, like, laboratory?
Right. Well, thank you for asking. That's a good question, because a lot of people, especially in the vegan movement, think, oh, he's that great savior. You know, mm-hmm. he's coming on the white horse to bring lab-grown meat to everybody. Ugh. They save the world. But, you know, I feel the same exact way. I mean, it's uh-huh. toxic. It's genetically engineered. It's chemical, perverse food coming out of a factory. I would never eat it because it's very unhealthy, and it's still, you know, meat, right? It's still trying to replicate the flesh of tortured animals. And it's a way to get people to eat. It's completely centralized. To get people eating food that's totally centralized. You have a few gigantic factories bringing in a bunch of toxic chemicals and making a so-called food and then shipping it out to them and having them eat that. And they can put anything into that food. You don't know what you're eating. It's right. not. We should be growing our own food. Right? I mean, I'm so glad we have a little bit, tiny bit of land here. We've planted 70 fruit and nut trees and a bunch of vegetables and berries and things. And we get a lot of the food right off of our own land, or we support local farmers markets. We've got to get reconnected to the earth, to the land, get reconnected to the beauty of growing food. My beautiful wife, Madeline, you know, she's out there every day helping to grow our vegetables and berries and fruits and nuts and things that we have here. And I think when we do that and we make a connection with the food, we can see that we don't need anything processed even. I mean, we don't really even need any processed food. We eat vegetables and grains and potatoes and sweet potatoes, and mm-hmm. it's fantastic. We don't get sick. I mean, the food becomes medicine. When you're growing the food yourself and you're putting your energy and your love into it, as the years go by, the plants get more and more, they know you. And
right.
that's one of the great things. That's one of the great things we have to understand, is that nature is intelligent. Plants are intelligent. They want to love us. The whole universe wants to love us. You know, we're in a loving, basically benevolent situation here where if we get sick, you know, it's usually just the body trying to cleanse something. Nothing to be, don't stop the process. Let yourself
right.
go through it, and
right.
you'll be much healthier. Right. I'm never worried if I have a little, you know, runny nose or a sore throat. That's good. It's a cleaning house. Great. Mm-hmm. So I would never go to get a drug to try to stop it. That's complete ridiculous. So I think that's the thing, is to just understand that genetically engineered foods, chemicals, this is really the enemy in the sense that those are the things that are making us sick, that keep us enslaved. That's how we enslave animals. That's how we get enslaved. Don't support any of that. Buy local, organic, plant-based foods and products as much as possible and minimize. It's so important to just not consume. You know, we lived in an RV for 17 years. If I wanted a new pair of pants, I had to give one away. I didn't have room. You know, we have these gigantic houses where we buy all this stuff. You know, like I was born and raised in Concord, Massachusetts, where Emerson said, things are in the saddle and ride mankind. You know, he was right. We the more stuff we get, the more we get tied down by it. So I think, you know, a minimalist lifestyle that's close to the earth, take time to connect with nature and with animals and be loving for the we only have a few years on this earth anyway. I mean, you know, no matter what, we're all going to leave here. We're all going to die within 10 or 11 decades at the most. So use the few decades that we have to spread love and kindness and compassion and in a passionate way like you do. I just love it. I mean, just get out there and rattle the cages. That's what we got to do.
Spread the word. Emerson or what's that other guy?
Thoreau? Alcott?
Yeah, I think, yeah, thank you. One of them said, you don't own your things, they own you.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I knew it was one of those guys. Right. So where can my listeners get more information about your book and your work?
I think the easiest thing is just to go to our website, probably, which is Will Tuttle, my name, willtuttle.com, or worldpeacediet.com. Either one of those goes to the same place, worldpeacediet.com or willtuttle.com. And we have, Madeline has lots of cooking videos there, gardening videos. We have lots of lectures, videos, music. We do a lot. I'm a piano player and composer, and Madeline plays the flute. Our tour schedule, we're doing a lot of events. We're doing a lecture in Sacramento in a couple of weeks, and we do a lot in other states that are more open. We did a whole 4-month lecture tour in Florida this over the winter.
Oh, cool.
So,
I hope your venues don't require people to be vaccinated.
Right. No, I would never do it. I mean,
I know.
I would never, ever do it. No masks, no, none of that.
I can't even. I was telling my last guest that I can't even do anything because my community, they'll say, oh, Cindy, can you come like here to do this? And I'll say, sure. And I've learned to say to them after several heartbreaking exchanges, but I'm not vaccinated. That's
right.
A problem. They'll say that's a problem.
Yeah.
So I'm not even invited anywhere anymore because everybody knows my vaccination status. It's like, I'd like to say that's none of your business, you know, but it's been made everybody's business these days.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm so grateful that you're standing up against the tyranny. That's really important. It's so important.
And to me, it's like, if I saw there was a true public health emergency or urgency, or if I saw people like dropping dead on the street, I would probably wear a mask and I'd probably go inside because I wouldn't want that to happen. But that's not what I'm seeing.
Right.
You know, that's nothing. We it's not like the Stephen King in The Stand, you know. It wasn't Captain Trips where 99% of the world was killed over this. Yep. You know, so it's just like, oh God, just relax. Like Douglas Adams said, don't panic. That's
right.
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
So anyway, I hate to go off on my issues in our interview, but Will, I think we have to talk again because
it's
really, to me, a fascinating conversation, and your website and the link to everything will be on the post. And I just really thank you for your work and for your compassion and your, you know, sense that there has to be massive healing.
Right. It's all about healing.
And that's what I'm trying to look at people. I'm trying to look at people like, I don't want to say they're damaged, but to look at you know, ways that we can overcome that instead of like me, I've always like, oh, you killed my son, blah, 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 whatever. George Bush, like, even though he came from a wealthy family, I feel like his life was worse than mine because right. I don't think he had love. And right. you know, I don't think he had love like Casey had love.
Right.
And that's what made
right.
me so mad was that right. you killed right. this loving, wonderful human being, and you weren't such a loving, wonderful human
right.
being.
Right.
But, you know, people are where they are, and, you know, they can stay there or go back or they can go forward.
Right. Yes, exactly. And each one of us can, as Gandhi said, be the change we'd like to see in the world. Just live a life of loving kindness and respect for all beings.
The soapbox for this edition. As always, I hope you were informed and inspired to do further research. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer Don DeBar and Dr. Will Tuttle for giving his time to be on the show today. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to The Soapbox. Peace out for now.